Now in America, we like solutions. We like solutions to problems. And there's so many companies that offer solutions. Companies with names like the pet solution, the hair solution, the debt solution, the world solution, the sushi solution. Companies with experts ready to solve these problems. Because only an expert can see there's a problem. And only an expert can deal with the problem. Only an expert can deal with the problem.
Over the past 30 years, Laurie Anderson's work has encompassed music, visual art, poetry, film, and photography. She was appointed the first artist in residence of NASA in 2002 and helped design the opening ceremonies for the 2004 Olympic Games in Athens. Her newest album, though, is firmly rooted in domestic soil. It's called Homeland, and although it won't be released by Nonesuch Records until next year, Ms. Anderson has already begun touring it around the country, and she will be performing on July 22nd through the 26th as part of the Lincoln Center Festival. I'm very pleased that it has brought her back to the show today. Hi, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Why are you touring the album before its release date?
Well,
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I'm working backwards on this one. This I wrote on the road. You know, this is done completely the other way because for a few reasons, I really didn't want to sit in the studio for a year and write a record and then try to replicate it. So this one is also now, you know, record budgets are like a fraction of what they used to be. So you really can't do that in a practical way. So I thought, how can I make a record in a way that would really be fun? And so I played this music with a lot of different groups, from like Mongolian throat singers to, you know, kind of New York experimental artists to all sorts of people, and came up with a kind of group of songs and stories that has become this thing called Homeland.
And the press notes say that each performance will be unique.
Yeah.
So this is going to change day by day,
yeah,
depending on what's happening in the world?
It's not quite that up to date. But, you know, I try to put stuff in that's going on. It's kind of a updatable calendar in a lot of ways. But the shows at the Rose Theater will be different every night because a lot of people are going to come through and play with us.
We'll talk about guest artists in just a moment. But does that mean that the record, the CD, will be a kind of a snapshot? It'll just be some version?
No, it's going to be a kind of culmination of things that I learned from the road and then just kind of see what works. So it won't be like a live album. It'll be kind of...
So it'll be a studio album?
It'll be a hybrid. The whole thing is a kind of like a weird beast.
The one thing that you can't capture on your recordings are the visual elements of your performances. What kind of visual elements are involved here?
None.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's just going to be the musicians on the stage?
Yeah, they're pretty fun to look at. You know, there's a little bit of a set, but it's not a multimedia thing. I mean, I kind of, you know, just walk around Manhattan, see all the screens doing everything. It looks like, you know, some of my past work, you know. Flashing around it. And plus, you know, I just like to hear music once in a while where you don't have to see the, you know, obligatory video wallpaper going on. You know, it just isn't. Plus, Homeland is really, really wordy, you know, and I couldn't find images that would work, you know, in that kind of like wordy world.
One of the stories, so you're telling stories in effect. This is
stories and songs. It's a mixture.
And there is a male voice on the sample that we received. Is that anybody we know?
Yes, it is. I'm nothing without my electronics. It's, you know, it's a box that I use to.
Oh, so it's you again.
Yes, me again. You know, and it's so much fun doing audio drag, I have to say.
But you have worked with any number of guest artists, Brian Eno, Peter Gabriel, and others, and you said that you're going to have a few during the Lincoln Center concerts.
Yeah.
You willing to name names?
Nope. But it's gonna be fun. It's going to be different.
Well, maybe you can do all the parts.
Yeah,
with that,
that's right.
With that vocal box.
That's a really good idea.
Why did you call it Homeland?
I think because I was... Because it rhymes with the second word, and also because it's not an American word. You know, no one would say homeland. It's a kind of, it's too fuzzy, too sentimental. Kind of sounds German, you know,
Yeah, when the Bush administration started talking about homeland security, it sounded to many people like something out of Germany,
exactly.
Not out of the United States.
Exactly.
Is that how it struck you?
Yeah. And it's taking a warm and fuzzy word, homeland, and putting it with a very cold one, security. But this, you know, I think our government is very, very, very story savvy and title savvy. You know, they know what they're doing. They really do, in terms of like shaping how to look at the world, how to look at the war, how to look at what's going on. So as someone who, that's what my job is too, stories. So it's a kind of like really great time to be doing this.
Well, you've come a long way. You used to teach art history. So where words, of course, were usually not present. Now more and more words have become important to you.
The way I taught art history was unorthodox. It was, you know, as a... Okay, so I was not a... I was teaching Egyptian architecture and Assyrian sculpture at night school here downtown Manhattan. And I was not keeping up with the Egyptological journals, to say the least. So these slides would come up, and I would look at them, and I would totally draw a complete blank. So I would just make things up. And the students would write it down, and I would test them on it. And that was...
And they've gone around ever since and said, well, it's a fact.
See, that's the thing. My former students... But the thing was, I did feel guilty at a certain point about, you know, this is history, not free-form fiction, and so I quit. Not before I was fired. Actually, but it was neck and neck right in there.
One of the stories in the performance touches on losing things. How did that idea come to you?
You know, I was making a film in Japan, and it was a really, it was for Expo, and you know, these just crazy expos are all about like jumping up and down. It's like, and celebrating technology. It's like the whole world is getting the new iPhone or something. I mean, it's like, wow, okay, you know. So there are all these pavilions, these show-off things, and I was asked to do the biggest film in the world, you know, and that would sit in all of these, you know, these kind of futuristic pavilions. My favorite pavilion, by the way, at that whole expo was Iceland, because all they had in theirs was like a candy bar and a sweater. They said, you know, let's skip Expo. It's so expensive.
Well, at least they didn't put the whale blubber in there.
Yeah, a little piece of blubber. That would be sweet. So I was making this postcard, you know, and there's a huge visual. It was like visual fables, really. And they had little stories on them, but no, in Japanese and English. So, but no sung words or no spoken words. So it was kind of like a weird, like, not silent movie because there was music, but just no lyrics. So all the lyrics were written, and they were kind of cryptic, and they were little things about. One of the stories was what you're saying about losing things. It was like story was something like I knew I'd lost something, but I just couldn't put my finger on it. You know, I get this feeling like, what did I forget? You just forgot something or lost it somewhere. Your keys, your wife, you don't know, you know, something. You have that feeling. So talking to the translator of the film, and she's saying, okay, what did you lose? And I said, no, that's it, but really the feeling of losing things, not the actual things that I was losing. She said, okay, when did you lose it? And I'm like, I'm being psychoanalyzed by the translator yet again. So I said, okay, let me think. And I realized that I wrote this just when we were invading Iraq. And then what I lost was my country, my idea about where I live. You know. And I thought, well, how does that play into your identity, who you think you are? You know, what does that mean in terms of where you think you live and what you think it represents, what it's about? So in a funny way, in the movie, I had paired this story about loss with an image of Mount Fuji, the most iconic image of place or national identity that you could think of, you know, I didn't put an American flag there because I'm not like that kind of artist. But, you know, but I have to say, I often learn what I'm doing from translators, because you have to say, okay, aside from all the poetry and all the other stuff around the sentence, what are you saying? What did you lose?
Well, actually, Americans seem to feel that we've lost our sense of direction. That's what the polls indicate. My guest is Laurie Anderson, who has a CD coming out next year, but she's performing versions of it, I guess still working it out in her head or changing it as the world changes. And she'll be performing Homeland on the 22nd through the 26th as part of the Lincoln Center Festival. And you are doing new things with the violin, aren't you? Violin is, I remember I asked you for the 8 things you would want to have no matter where you were.
And
the first thing you said was a violin.
Yeah.
But now you've added to that a Chinese violin, an erhu.
Well, that was an early version of this work.
We're no longer playing that?
Well, it's kind of like the ghost of the erhu is in the show. Because when I was working with these Mongolian players, they were like throat singers. And they played this beautiful two-stringed Chinese violin, let's say, called erhu. And it's a very raspy sound. It's like, it's not like that. The Western violin, which is lots of vibrato.
Well, like that other Chinese violin that we hear so often.
Piercing, yeah.
That kind of very high lyrical sound.
Exactly.
That's in the soundtrack of every Chinese movie.
You've ever rented. Yeah. And this is kind of a beautiful human, and they make their own instruments also. So, you know, we had a great time working together and playing those different types of stringed instruments. And so I, you know, kind of gravitated over to their way of playing. So I thought, what a great way to play the violin. So that kind of grittiness got into some of the, not just the electronics, but the style that I was playing it in.
Have you ever had any of them teach you how to do throat singing? Because I have sat in a radio studio with a throat singer just as close to me as you are right now and watched him do that and still not believed it.
I know, because the head becomes a radio tuned to like 11 simultaneous stations, you know, like, so complicated what they're doing. They're resonating all these different cavities in their heads. I never had the ambition to learn that. I just had
I want to know how to
really
do that.
Well, go to Mongolia. You know, you'd have a lot of time on your hands.
Well, it's interesting that you, with all of your interest in Asia, wound up doing the opening ceremony in Athens. And are you going to have any connection at all with the Beijing Olympics?
No, you know, one of these is enough. It was really, like, stressful, I have to say. Although, being with these, I was the only American on the Greek, you know, team, and I have to say they're the smartest people I ever met in my life. Is it something about the Greek language that's so knife-like, or what? I don't know what it is, like, but we would be looking at something and say, let's look at it from this angle here. And it was an angle I couldn't have imagined existed. So it was breathtaking. It really was. I mean, and demoralizing, too. You walk out and you go, wow, I just feel like so stupid.
Well, it's good that you never taught ancient Greek art. Only
that's for sure.
Assyrian and
Egyptian. I do start Homeland with a story from a Greek play, though. It begins that way. It's like a little footnote from a play by Aristophanes, The Birds, really, really hilariously funny play about birds who are building a wall, you know. That's another story. But the quote that the little reference I was using was to a story that they just referred to in the play, but it's a story about a moment from before the world began when there are just billions of birds, nothing but birds, no land, just sky. And all the birds are flapping around like, rah, rah, just like a crazy moment. And everything's fine until after a while there's a problem because one of these birds is a little lark and her father dies. So all the birds panic because they don't know what to do with the body. Big Greek problem, you know, parents, the body, whatever, you know. And so they have no idea what to do, and they're like really confused. And finally, the lark decides to, has a solution. She decides to bury her father in the back of her own head. And this was, as I'm sort of framing it, the beginning of memory, you know, what you do with the world that you lost, you know. And the sense that also of groundlessness at this moment in the 21st century is the feeling like, you know, it's just swept from under you. Plus, you know, the physical world is changing so much and into the digital realm that there are a couple of stories about that in Homeland, too, what it's like to when things start disappearing, phone booths, record stores, bookstores, you know, what happens when your bird's flying around in midair, you know.
So this is not just about political concerns, but about the whole, all the different changes that we're seeing at the beginning of the 21st century.
Some of them.
Well, the ones that would...
The ones I've been able to notice.
Like the loss of bookstores and record stores and such.
That it does make me sad, I have to say.
Yeah. Laurie Anderson will be performing Homeland at Lincoln Center on the 22nd through the 26th, and you can find out more about tickets on our show page at WNYC.org. Meanwhile, we just have little snippets from early recordings of early performances, or is this going to be part of the final thing on Nonesuch?
You never know. This could be the only time you'll ever hear it.
My great thanks to the always enigmatic Laurie Anderson.
You know, the reason I really love the stars is that we cannot hurt them. We can't burn them, we can't melt them or make them overflow. We can't flood them or blow them up or turn them out. But we are reaching for them. We are reaching for them.